All right, first case we have up today, docket number 82908, Las Vegas Review-Journal v. Clark County Coroner. Are we ready to proceed? Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay.
For the record, may it please the court, Maggie McCletchy for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. The first issue I'd like to address today is why the Nevada Public Records Act requires full compensation for costs and reasonable fees in a proceeding. The coroner contends that the NPRA fees and costs provision should be strictly construed like other fees and costs provision. However, the NPRA states plainly that all its provisions should be interpreted liberally in favor of access. That includes the fees and costs provision. While the coroner claims that the connection between access to records and the fees provision is too attenuated despite the plain language in NRS 239.011 subsection 2 that all the provisions are supposed to be interpreted liberally in favor of access, this case perfectly illustrates just how important the fees and costs provision is. It took over 3.5 years of litigation to get records. On remand, the district court ultimately found not only was the Las Vegas Review-Journal, entitled to access, but that the coroner's claims against access were pretextual and that the public interest in access greatly weighed in favor of access. The district court also made specific findings in the order denying the stay, for example, that the coroner's office had engaged in dilatory litigation tactics. The district court found that the court is hard-pressed to imagine a more blatant and flagrant attempt to obstruct and frustrate the purpose of the NPRA than evidenced by the coroner in this case. The work in the case was difficult, it was long, and it was hard. That includes the work on appeal. On the original appeal, the Review-Journal succeeded on 3 very significant issues. First, we overcame the categorical claim that the records at issue could be withheld in their entirety. Second, we overcame a prohibitive claim by the coroner's office that it could charge more than the 50-cent per page cap in the prior extraordinary use provision. And third, we overcame a claim by the coroner that's important in now public records cases across the board. We overcame a claim that we somehow had to establish bad faith before we could vindicate our right to fees and costs.
Ms. McCletchy?
Yes.
What, if anything, do we take from the fact that the statute now kind of expressly talks about appellate fees, where the iteration that was at play here didn't? Do we take anything from that, or?
I don't think we need to take anything from that, because I think the court was correct. I think it was February 2020 when it issued its prior decision in this case and correctly held that it's the prior version of the NPRA that's before this court. But let me be clear. I think that both before and after SB 287, a requester is entitled to all their reasonable fees and all their costs in a proceeding, and here's why. First, the language in NRS 239.011.2 couldn't be plainer. It says in the proceeding. This court has consistently interpreted that to mean throughout. That's consistent with an interpretation of the NPRA that furthers access. As this court evidences, I think, in fact, that perhaps even the majority of our work was on appeal. And if all a government entity has to do is appeal, most requesters may not be able to keep fighting. And fighting was necessary in this case to vindicate the central purpose of the NPRA and the public interest in favor of access that the district court found. Further, the additional language doesn't limit or qualify proceeding at all. The additional language, which I don't think is before the court, but that language I don't think should be interpreted as meaning that previously appellate fees weren't available. And that's because that new provision says that if the governmental entity appeals the decision of the district court and the decision is affirmed in whole or part, the requester is entitled to recover from the governmental entity his and her costs and reasonable fees for the appeal. That's separate and apart from whether they're the prevailing requester. A requester need not even prevail ultimately on remand. So for example, in this case, if this provision had been in place, and which it wasn't, but even if it was, and we on remand, we had not ultimately won access, we still significantly won issues on appeal. That provision was adopted as part of amendments emphasizing now the prompt right of access in the new SB 287 and to deter appeals by the government.
Let me ask you to switch subjects here, if you could.
Sure.
Let's say that we agreed with you that the explanation for the reduction in the fees is lacking. We have the Brunzell findings that get processed through, and on each, basically the written order and the oral order favored you. We have the oral statement about insurance fees and 30% reduction, but that's really it's not tied to any of the Brunzell factors. And so let's say we agreed with you, leaving aside the $17,000 for a minute on the interlocutory appeal that came up and got dismissed. Would we have to remand for another proceeding with respect to asking for an explanation as to the reduction that is more tied to Brunzell and gives us more information, or is that something you would urge us to just take in hand and handle ourselves?
I think that this is a unique case in which I think it's actually more appropriate for this court to determine fees and costs. I understand generally why this court would not want to bother itself with going through the extensive record on fees and costs and all of the detail, but this case has been up and down here on numerous issues, and so much of the important work in this case was on appeal that I think that this is an unusual and unique circumstance in which this court is in a better position than the district court is.
All of our cases seem to say it's for the district court to decide, and we either affirm it or we remand it. And I'm just wondering if you find in that, I understand your argument that this is unique, but is there any latitude in that legally, in that standard, without inviting us to second guess every attorney fee application in any manner of case?
I think this is a very unusual case in light of how much work was done at the appellate level, and I think that here we're also a very unusual circumstance in which the district court judge that was on this case was on for such a short period of time. This is an unusual case where justice requires that without further delay that this court consider fees and costs. In any case, even in the alternative, if the court were to remand, I think it's important to remind the district court about what the fees and costs provision's purpose is. Its purpose, just like the other provisions of the NPRA, is to further access to public records. Here, the district court's determination to slash the fees and costs by approximately a third, more than $100,000, despite the years of work, and despite the district court's findings of not just that all of the Brunzell factors were met, which include things like the importance of the issues, the prominence of the action, not only were all of those factors met, but the district court also happened to, in this case, make specific findings that the coroner's office had engaged in conduct that was antithetical to the NPRA, in conduct that litigation conduct that necessarily required extensive work by the review journal.
Could you comment on your stipulation that you agreed to on the? I don't remember if it was a writ. I think it was a writ from the coroner. And there was some emergency practice, and then there was a stipulated dismissal of that, each party to bear their own fees and costs. What about the $17,000 that's associated with that stipulation, as argued by your opposing colleague?
So I think that the issue at that juncture, and that was they had filed a new notice of appeal after the order on remand from the district court and had filed an emergency motion to stay, and then there was an agreement to voluntarily dismiss. The only thing before this court that this court could have resolved was NRAP fees and costs, which go to frivolousness and bad faith in litigation. Not what was before this court was not whether we were entitled to the fees and costs in the proceeding under the NPRA. And I think that the Board of Gallery case is distinguishable because there the district court was addressing NRS 18 fees, I think, and this court had already determined that there was not bad faith, that the claims weren't vexatious, and that there was good faith. So this is a different circumstance because we're not seeking fees under the analog to NRAP 38, NRS 18. We're seeking fees and costs pursuant to something that wasn't before the court in dismissing their appeal. And I think that distinction with NRS 18 is important too, with regard to whether it's the Barisoni line of cases or cases like In Re Estate and Living Trust of Miller and Musso that apply. This case, even more so than Musso and the Trust of Miller case, is even more appropriate to find the proceeding that fees on appeal should be included. And that's because here we have two things. One is we have the language proceeding in the NPRA, which includes work on appeal necessarily, as we see in this case. But second, in those cases, they talked about the underlying policies. Here, there is an equally, if not more, important policy at stake, which is furthering the right to public records, and it's one that's enshrined in the NPRA at the beginning of the statute.
Ms. McCletchie, can I ask a brief sort of procedural question?
Sure.
In reading the transcript of the hearing regarding your fee application that we're appealing here, at the end of the hearing, the court asked you to prepare the order, and then I see that the order that was entered is one that was prepared by opposing counsel. Can you tell me what happened in there?
I don't remember the specific differences between the two orders, but I'm sure that we must have submitted competing orders and that the district court picked the order from the coroner's office. I will point out that nowhere in that order does the court say that it's denying fees based on appellate work, and the district court did not make that finding or legal determination. The coroner's office did not appeal that. I know that they're sort of trying to divine a reason for the reduction, but they did not appeal the issue of fees on appeal, and the district court did not reduce the fees because fees are not part of appellate fees are not part of what an NPRA requester is entitled to.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Jackie Nichols here on behalf of the Clark County Coroner's Office. The district court did not abuse its discretion in reducing the ultimate fee award to the review journal. In awarding fees and costs, this court has mandated that lower courts apply the factors in determining reasonableness. Those factors are referred to as the Brunzell analysis. It's undisputed that the court reviewed and considered the Brunzell factors. And this court has time and time again stated that a line-by-line analysis is not necessary for the court's determination in finding that particular fees are reasonable.
Well, Ms. Nichols, what part of the Brunzell analysis that the court provided supports the reduction of the fees by almost 40%?
Yes, Your Honor. So I would direct you to the third factor, which talks about work actually performed. And in the order, which would be 1280 of the joint appendix, it talks about the third factor and how the Review Journal's counsel dedicated a substantial amount of time in this case. And then when you go to the transcript, and specifically the last two pages of the transcript, which would be 1220 and 1221. The court says, upon Mrs. McCletchie's clarification of why the court decided to reduce the awards, the court says, it was just a matter of counsel, basically, you can call it vast years of auditing bills for insurance companies. I went through and looked and did it. I spent 3.5 hours going through the bills, counsel. I don't have a problem with the blended rate. The rate's not the issue here. It's the time.
So what did he reduce?
It's the time. I just looked at certain issues and said, okay, this is an amount I believe should have been. And I pulled up the court record and said, how long was this hearing? And I verified every one of those opinions. That's how I came up with my reasonable amount.
Right. I read that. I still don't know what he reduced. Do you?
The line-by-line entry of what specific entries he reduced?
What did they spend too much time on, or what did they overbill, or what generates the reduction the court ordered?
Well, Your Honor, I would say it's the entire litigation. So if you look at the court order, I believe it's on page 1272. So first, on that page, you have the chart that identifies what Review Journal's counsel initially spent on the underlying litigation. And if you look at that, that totals almost 97 hours. It comes out to 96.8.
Okay.
And then I believe it's a couple pages later, I think it's 1276, there is a second chart. When you add up all of those hours, it comes to 685 hours, nearly seven times as much as the initial underlying litigation. And so how I interpret the court's hearing in conjunction with the order is that the court reviewed line by line to determine whether or not the amount spent on each task was reasonable. And because this court doesn't require a line by line analysis, the court doesn't need to say this specific task,
But I'm concerned here, and I'm following up on the same line that Justice Kadish is, because in your brief you say, although the district court concluded that the factors weighed in favor of an award, it recognized that the substantial amount of time expended in the litigation was unreasonable and therefore reduced the award. That gave me pause because I had read the order earlier, and I go back to the order and I don't see that determination of unreasonableness. What I see on page 13 of the order, and it was prepared by, it's on your firm's letterhead, it says, counsel for the Review Journal dedicated substantial time and resources to thoroughly researching and briefing each issue at both district court and appellate levels and demonstrated substantial skill in the work performed. This factor, therefore, weighs in favor of awarding the RJ's attorney's fees and costs. So I don't see the finding that that factor, there were too many hours spent on too little work. I don't find the unreasonableness. I find a 30 or 40% cut, and I don't have an explanation. That's for me, the trouble in this case.
Sure. So it would be the coroner's argument that the fact that it says dedicated substantial time and resources, nothing in that paragraph also says that the amount of time was reasonable. I understand the court's position that it doesn't say it's unreasonable, but at the same time, nothing in that paragraph says that it is, in fact, the amount of time spent is reasonable. And I think that is supported.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but it seems to me that every one of the four factors analyzed in that order speaks complimentary to the Review Journal's efforts. There isn't anything negative in there at all. And then the court just goes on to say, based on the review, you're getting this much in attorney's fees. And I'm troubled by your statement today that your interpretation is, how should a reviewing appellate court have to rely on individuals' interpretations of a court order when it's the court's job to make an order that we can all look at and understand and review for its propriety, not have to kind of make individualized determinations and guess essentially at what he may have been thinking when he decided to reduce this.
And I would refer again this court to the transcript. This court goes to the transcripts. They did it in Wynn v. Smith, which was an attorney fee issue. And there they look for clarification to the transcript.
But it seemed in the transcript that Ms. McCletchie tried to ask a very specific question. Can you give me specific information? And the court cut her off and gave a very general answer. Well, I've done this for a long time, auditing insurance defense fees, and I looked at everything and I did it. That's kind of what he says. I looked at everything and I did it without, and I'm not faulting you all, but I'm just saying, look, I get that Schwartz doesn't necessarily say that vagueness automatically equates to a remand, but there's got to be something, right? It's got to be something for an appellate court to review in terms of the rationale for deleting over or almost 40% of somebody's fee request.
And the coroner's position is that rationale, what the record supports in relation to the district court's ruling at oral argument, what the transcript reflects, is the 100, I'm rounding up, the 100 hours out spent on the underlying initial litigation comparison to the 700 hours that was subsequently spent throughout the remaining of the litigation.
So, Ms. Nichols, I have a question to kind of follow up on what Justice Hearn is asking. In the order,
it correctly points out that in analyzing the amount of fees under Brunzell, Schutte said you begin with an understanding of the lodestar amount. And then it says, regardless of which method is chosen as a starting point, however, the court must continue its analysis by considering the requested amount in light of Brunzell. So my take in this case is that it's somewhat new in terms of what we've seen before. When we look at an analysis of the hours spent by the lawyer, the judge needs to make assessments as to what hours they're rejecting, what hours they're accepting under a lodestar theory. Wouldn't you agree?
I would have to agree with that, Your Honor.
So that being the case, if the judge felt that the appellate hours were excessive, wouldn't it be incumbent upon the judge to articulate what of that those hours were inappropriate or at least in that judge's view, excessive?
Yes, Your Honor.
So probably an explanation offered in the order that comparing this to his insurance background and insurance audits probably isn't enough. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I agree that the comment regarding insurance isn't enough, but what I find telling in this is that the court did take the time to review all the entries.
And I'm not disputing that he may have, but what is the problem here is a failure to articulate what portion of 680 hours is excessive in connection with the appeal or duplicitous of the trial hours that were spent. Would you agree?
I can see that, certainly, Your Honor.
So the reason I bring this up is it seems to me that we have said in our prior case law that if you're looking at the lodestar, you're supposed to start there and then take the analysis from there. And then the court's discretion is really pretty heavily respected by the appellate court, it seems to me. So if the judge goes through and says, it appears to me that there's 80 hours of research that's been duplicated from what was done in the trial court or wasn't necessary in this instance, that seems to me to be a basis then for some allocation.
Right? Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to point out, though, that although the district court did not rule on this issue, this court can affirm if it finds that the decision was correct. And so the coroner urges this court to look at NRS 239.011 and reach the determination that the review journal was not entitled to recover appellate fees at the time that this litigation ensued for the application of the MPRA, because at that time, SB 287 came into effect for all cases after October 1st, 2019. And that is when the legislature clarified that requesters can obtain appellate fees and costs from a Public Records Act petition that's appealed by a government entity. In the proceeding is not defined. And as raised in the briefs.
Well, I got to tell you, I handled an awful lot of open records cases, and I was a little bit surprised that someone would suggest that in the proceedings wouldn't include appellate work, because quite frankly, the law in our state on open meeting and open records laws has been evolving for 25 years, actually 30 years. So I don't know how lawyers could be expected to prosecute or defend those cases without getting appellate review even before the statutory amendment.
And I think the legislature finally understood that, which is why they amended it to include specifically to use the language appeal fees and costs.
There's a lot of cases awarding fees prior to that amendment that included appellate requests.
I don't believe that anyone challenged it, Your Honor.
No.
And it has not been presented before this court previously.
Well, they did in Don Ray. Anyway, okay.
And so when we're looking...
Let me ask counsel, I mean, if you think this court is in a position to affirm the district court, even though the district court didn't espouse any rationale in its decision, assuming we find that, that by our own analysis of things, we could say, nope, this amount is okay. To the converse of that, and to Justice Pickering's earlier question, could we not then look at the record if the district court made no rationale and find that a full award of fees and costs was justified by the record before the court?
No, I think that requires a different analysis. What you have as part of the record are the fees and costs that specifically identify appeal. And so if this court determines that NRS 239.011 did not allow for the recovery of appellate work prior to 2019,
Let's just say we disagree with you on that. Let's just say we believe proceeding would encompass everything that's ongoing in the case.
Then I would agree with Justice Pickering in the fact that it would have to be remanded for the district court to articulate if, for whatever reason, there was a 30% reduction.
Okay.
Isn't that kind of, would that maybe be futile in a case like this with a judge that just says, I think 700 hours is unreasonable, just got assigned the case from years of litigation in Crockett's court and in this court? Why wouldn't that be futile if we were just to remand it back? He would just do the same thing, but make it exactly maybe better detailed findings. Why wouldn't we just reassign it or look at it ourselves?
Well, the law has never supported that. The law has always said the district court is in the better fact-finding position to determine what is reasonable and what is not. And I understand the argument that this is a new judge. He nevertheless took the time to review the record. He reviewed line by line, like he said in the transcript, and he compared it to the record. So it's not as if he just made this determination of a 30% reduction.
So, Ms. Nichols, aid this court. What was your argument below about what number of appellate hours were duplicitous or excessive?
I don't have the...
And why?
I don't have the hours. It was 108,000. Roughly, and that was.
That's the 92 on appeal plus the 17 on the.
From the voluntary dismissal,
yeah.
Correct.
That's
but
how
I have
much.
A question.
I apologize. Can I just clarify? You're saying 108,000 was what you argued needed to be cut from the fees, or is that the amount that should have been awarded?
108,000 is what should have been a cut because that is the total that should have been reduced because that was the total amount incurred on appeal, both from the underlying appeal from Judge Crockett's order and the fee appeal, as well as the subsequent appeal that was voluntarily dismissed.
Let me ask you this, and it's troubling to me because we have an appeal that from an order that vacates substantial portion of this fee award and or fee application. And if the coroner was opposing the fee application, and there was an exchange in the district court transcript where the review journal presses the court for greater detail with respect to why are you making this kind of a cut to our fee application. And then we get the order that's written. But isn't it the law that, to that extent, you prevailed? You succeeded in getting a 40% reduction. But should we remand at your request to better buttress a failed articulation of the reasons for the reduction, because I am really troubled, and in your exchange with Justice Hardesty, you concede that it's difficult for us to sort out why precisely, you know, like they go through the lodestar, the Brenzel factors, and then there's this, and so we're taking 40% off, and we're like, why? But should it be appropriate for us to vacate and remand for another bite at the apple in this context?
I think it's appropriate to remand to allow the district court judge to fully explain himself as to why the 40% reduction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Nichols pointed out that the fees and costs in this case grew exponentially after the first appeal, and that's true. It's because the coroner appealed. We had to keep fighting. We had to fight at this court on three significant public policy issues, and then the burden shifted to the Las Vegas Review-Journal on remand, and we had to litigate and show why the public interest weighed in favor of production of the records. While the record shows that the coroner only looked at 3 out of 700 of the reports, the reviewed in the coroner still relied on the categorical approach. The Las Vegas Review-Journal came forward with myriad public interest reasons and extensively briefed. It's an important issue about child autopsies and autopsies in general, and we took that issue seriously. We took our burden on remand from this court seriously, and we worked hard. I'm not contending that a district court needs to make line by line allocations and reductions. However, the issue in this case isn't just that it's unclear or confusing, and we don't know why the district court did what it did. We do know that, but the district court already made findings not only that all of the Brenzell factors, all of them, including the work performed, favored us. The district court also made findings that the coroner acted in bad faith in the litigation and that there were significant hurdles for the Las Vegas Review-Journal had to overcome at every step. The district court said things like that the coroner's actions with regard to these records borders on the scandalous and impertinent. We had to fight very, very hard to get access to these records. The record shows there's substantial evidence fully supporting our request for reasonable fees. The coroner tries to say that we take this position that we're entitled to all of our fees no matter what. That's not true. We specifically sought reasonable fees. We came forward with substantial evidence both initially and in our later amended motion, including declarations that, if anything, our rates were lower than what we could otherwise command in the market. We came forward with substantial evidence of detailing the work, the qualities of the advocate, and the record is expansive before this court. This does not need to get remanded just so the district court can explain why it made such a drastic reduction. The district court abused its discretion by finding that the coroner's office engaged in bad faith conduct and that all of the Brenzell factors favored fees and costs. The lodestar is the presumptive amount. It's the guiding light.
If I could ask, if we were to decide it needed to be remanded, in line with Ms. Nichols' statement that, you know, if it's going to be reassessed, then it needs to be the district court in the first instance, or the second instance, I guess, that does that. What's your position about whether it should go back to the judge that's already come up with a number in his head with a failed rationale, for lack of a better word?
I think technically it would be the third instance, because initially Judge Crockett did assess a portion of our fees and fully award us. But I think in light of the substantial evidence that we came forward with, that there is no need to remand. This isn't a matter where the district court just needs to provide a better explanation. This is consistent with the ACLU case that I cite that says that because this court is familiar with awarding attorney fees on appeal, we'll determine the attorney fee award in this case. And that was also a public records case with extensive work on appeal.
What was the name of that one as well? I'm sorry, what was that last case?
That's the Blaine case. It is cited in our briefs. It's ACLU v. Blaine. It's a public records case from Washington. It's 95 Wash App 106.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to appear in front of you all in person again.
Nice to have you. All right. Let's see. 4:00, we will take this matter as submitted, and we will reconfigure for the next argument.